Welcome, everybody. Tim Emerson of Kuan Yin Healing back for our Q&A session. And so we went over a lot last time. And even just going over the physical stuff is going to bring things up, which may be coming to the surface for people now. And certainly jumping into emotions is going to bring up a bunch of stuff. And if you find that you are having a little trouble keeping up, that's why next week, week four, is integration week. So there's no new material. You can go back through and deepen or catch up or wherever you are with any of that stuff. And also we've set in place, you know, you may have questions about some of the building blocks of this program. So in particular, the levels of being and understanding that, as well as the hero's journey, what it means to cross the threshold and all that. So in this week's module, I had some clarification here about some of the ways that the ideas that people usually have about the astral plane, how we often feel like we're kind of at the mercy of our emotions when in fact we're able to both keep them in context as well as recognizing them for what they are, reflections of our thoughts. We'll talk more about that when we get into thought and awareness and so forth in the later modules. But I do want to make the case to, even if you're having trouble with it, to just keep in mind that joy and health are a natural state. We have a major cultural issue with that. We have a major, you know, yeah, but mental issue with that. But it truly is the reality. And there's a fair amount of research on so-called primitive societies and how they're often much happier. They don't work as hard. They don't face the same problems we do, and yet they live in a state of abundance and happiness. You know, so a lot of this is our perspective and changing our paradigm. And our goal here is to move this from mere theory to practicality. So that's going to mean a couple things. It's going to mean letting go of practices in the physical sense and emotional reactions that we're used to, that often we're invested in. But it comes down to this: if you're being dragged, let go of the rope. You know, if you're in a hole, stop digging. So kind of just looking aware, you know, looking around. If you're going through hell, for God's sakes, don't slow down. We tend to get really invested in our emotional states rather than looking at them. And hang on, I'm slightly distracted as one of my cats is insisting it's playtime. okay, so just a couple of reminders, some of the things we talked about in case you had questions about that. You know, this is not something that came up anew for mankind, going all the way back to the history of Western civilization, in particular, philosophy and literature and Greek theater, and getting into this whole idea that we have a dual nature of logic and passion. And what that means for us as human beings is something that we've been balancing around for quite some time in Western civilization, as well as the primitive and Eastern and other cultures. In particular, the idea of initiation, of understanding that the true roles of the problems that we face are, in fact, important lessons. They're not hurdles, but rather more like governators, you know, governors. They keep us at the proper speed. They keep us where we are at the moment as we work through this on the way to other things. Kind of just paging through and hitting some highlights without just repeating everything. It's also very useful to remember the basics of the Course in Miracles dichotomy. There are only two emotions, love and fear. And if we're not doing things out of love, we're doing them out of fear. And we don't need to judge ourselves about this, but we can recognize this. And so if I'm not acting out of love, what am I, why not? You know, what am I afraid of? What's holding me back? I think one of the things that usually creates that imbalance is we tend to be fearful of the cost of doing things, and we forget to look at the cost of not doing them. You know, if I don't do this, what's the cost of that? What are the consequences of that? And in the homework, I asked her to do something that is perhaps new and difficult at first, is really looking down at what are the things that are bugging us? What are the patterns? Where are things that come up repeatedly? Where are our tragic flaws? Okay, but our state of being human, even if we are wonderful humans, we have tragic flaws. Things to which we're otherwise blind, but if we really look at the reality of the situation, we can see there are some things that we're not usually aware of, but continually get in our way. This is the first part, to start to notice our patterns and to ask ourselves, you know, what are these tragic flaws? And if we can't see them, this is why it's good to share this with other people. Other people tend to notice more quickly what's going well for us and what we keep doing over and over again. Or simply paying attention to the things. You know, I find this happens to me quite a bit, honestly. Somebody will give me a piece of feedback, and it's, you know, it's just an offhand. It's not good or bad. It's just something they'd notice or commented on that's going on in my life. And then when five more people give me the same feedback in the same week, everybody's looking at the same thing, and it's time for me to look at that. And the other part of this, remember, in the hero's journey, nobody fights their demons alone. We tend to do this. And there's an understandable reason why. You know, if an injured animal knows to go hide in the hole, you know, so where it's safe from further danger. But this is not service at this place in our being, in our consciousness, in our evolution. And so, don't fight our demons alone, and give some thought to who are our allies, and really give this careful thought. Not just our inner qualities, you know. Sometimes we have strengths, but our strengths also bring us further out than other people go. And so we end up needing more help, even in the areas of our strengths. Where do we consistently fall down, even if we recognize this? This is where we need some help. Really to jump into doing that, into accepting that help. This includes asking for spiritual help, so our daily spiritual practice. Starting to recognize our ego for the good things that it is, but also getting it out of the way and having it accept the humility to fall into its proper place. Recognizing that the dual role of emotions and desire and mirror, getting used to listening to our heart, and this is difficult at first. Our emotions are mirrors of what we're thinking. Our emotions are mirrors of what we're attracting. They're intimately connected to our desires. They're also intimately connected to our fears. Okay, and consequence. Our emotions aren't fact of life, but very important feedback loops. They show us where we are, what's going well. They show us where we're stuck, and they show us why we're stuck. And learning to look at emotions as feedback is something that's new, I think, to the bulk of us. So getting into that new habit. We tend to accept emotions as like, or treat them as if they're permanent states. And we need to understand that, you know, emotion, they're moving states. They're moving through us. All emotions are. So when we're not feeling, you know, in a good state, the feeling will pass. And when we're feeling in a good state, you know, the feeling needs to be continually fed, or it too will pass. It's like rule one in Buddhism is impermanence. So the practice of gratitude, for example, you know, it's an inventory list of, you know, what do I want to keep in my life? You know, what do I want to keep feeding? Right now I'm feeling rested and well fed and healthy and clean, and but tomorrow, even though I feel good, I'm going to eat again, I'm going to sleep again, I'm going to take a shower again. You know, these are good things that need to be maintained. And the same is true of our emotional state, of our happiness. And I'm going to repeat, to really wrap our heads around and to come closer and closer to understanding that our natural state truly is joy and health. You know, I quoted last week some of Michael Beckwith's work, your original work of beauty, light, love, joy, and bliss. The truth is that you are to learn how to handle love, joy, creativity, and success. Okay? This is who we really are. So let the painful emotions pass through, not camp out and become our identity. Again, a new practice, but we really can gradually learn to do this. And one useful way at first is to, instead of lamenting the things around us, which is what usually keeps people stuck before they start a process like this, to recognize those things as the mirror they are. And the good things as well. You know, the reason you have that wonderful best friend in your life is because that reflects part of you. So pay attention to those things as well. I'm kind of paging through the PDF for this week, and nobody said anything, but I noticed like the right margin is cut off. So I'll fix that and address that. Now, the role of desire. This is probably one of the most misunderstood aspects of all of Buddhism. And in fact, one of the questions for this week flirts with this as well. And a couple of roots of this problem. So first, it's not that desire is bad. People often come with a superficial understanding, come to that understanding that desire is bad, desire is the enemy. This is absolutely not true. We're spiritual beings. We are evolving towards something larger. To do that, we have to grow. And what makes us grow is desire. So expansion and growth and being better and wanting more, this is an essential component of a spiritual being. And even if you become fully enlightened, then expanding and want, and this to include all beings. This is the whole heart of Kuan Yin's message upon enlightenment. So desire is not the problem. It's the root, okay? Buddha didn't say desire is the problem. Buddha said desire is the root of pain. The real issue is attachment. This is why Buddhism, particularly Tibetan Buddhism, stresses the importance of impermanence and recognizing that life is impermanent, that everything that happens in the world is impermanent. It's passing. The real pain comes from attachment to those things, to try to make them permanent when they in fact are transient. The real pain comes from judging this is good and this is bad, instead of just looking at things, you know. To evolve past that judgment. For example, take physical pain. Okay, the physical pain of my hand burning on the stove. Is this good or bad? Well, it feels bad, but that feedback is excellent. Or the problem would be much worse if I didn't have that. So we need to look at these things. The outcomes, these are usually what we're thinking of. Outcomes are attachments. Instead of thinking of outcomes as goals, outcomes should be mileposts, while desires are continuous. Okay? We have several things that we have that we want, and we're going to continue to desire more things as we get the things that we're seeking. Simply accumulating past desires isn't going to fulfill us. If we just say, okay, well, I shouldn't desire this, I'm going to stop, you're just going to be frustrated. It's just not going to create any good condition. The whole thing is to embrace the whole journey, that to embrace the each part of it with gratitude, to recognize fulfilled desires, and to celebrate them, and to celebrate moving towards new things. So desire is, the whole point of this is desire is a creative force. Attachment, however, is not. Okay? So when we can conceive a thought of something new, attach positive emotion to it, and that is what becomes desire. Okay? If we start lamenting that we don't have it, now we're not talking about desire, we're talking about attachment and fear, and these are limiting, restrictive forces. Okay? And the same thing, a similar discussion to this is the misunderstanding of karma. Karma is not justice per se. It's not reward or punishment. Karma is the fulfillment of your desire. Every desire comes to fruition in whatever life. Once something is desired, it simply must come into fruition. You have set that energy in motion. But that energy comes as complete packages. So if you are worried about things that come with it, you get those things as well, because you're feeding those things with energy, and that's what you experience. This is why the wheel of karma holds us life after life. But it doesn't mean that it's a bad thing. We continue to expand as we experience incarnation. There will come a time, one day, when the only thing we desire is awareness. And then we'll transcend into other things. But to say, well, I want to just jump there, so I'm not going to desire these other things, one, that's simply not being honest. And two, there's nothing wrong with it. Okay? Desire is a creative force, and we are here to expand and create and experience the fullness of that. So to get a balance of all that, this is the importance of living in the now. We appreciate where we are. We appreciate what we are. We learn to just be and to become fulfilled in the moment. And with this detachment from our outcomes, then we can have an emotional calm. Again, desire is fine. Attachment to outcomes is what creates suffering. And another misunderstanding is the idea that, suffering is part of life. And I love Eckhart Tolle's take on this, who says, suffering is necessary until it's not necessary. So you need to suffer as long as that's your place, your view, your reality, until you move past that, and then suffering becomes optional. Now let me be clear about this. There's still going to be pain. Remember, pain is not good or bad. Pain is feedback. So pain is mandatory, but suffering is optional. Bringing this into emotional balance takes a little doing, but awareness is the beginning of this. Now, this again, now you can maybe start to see why I started by setting these things in place. This is the supreme importance of a spiritual path on a daily program. Okay, to balance this, to start to gain clarity, we're going to need that daily touchstone. We're going to need to focus into that clarity of truth, whatever that is for us. And it will build day by day. But that's the importance of this process. Okay? And then the rest of this module, I addressed some common things that most of you have heard in the introductory Kuan Yin Path material. But, how to get unstuck from feeling overwhelmed. It's good to review this, because this tends to come around for all of us. Remember, first of all, that overwhelmed is a feeling. It's not a situation. three common problems with this. I remind myself of this constantly if I'm starting to feel overwhelmed coming along. Number one, stop trying to do everything by myself. You know, whether that's ego, pride, embarrassment, or whatever else I want to attach to this. If I'm trying to do everything by myself, it's going to be too much. There's just no question. Whether that's actual things or dealing with things or emotional things, right? Number two, stop trying to control everything. If I feel this is the way this has got to work, you know, I remind myself I'm not the boss of everything. I need to let this go. I love the beginning of Ken Blanchard and Spencer Johnson's The One-Minute Manager. We typically see a manager, someone torn in multiple directions, you know, the finger on every pulse. But a good manager is standing around the office with very little to do because everything is running so smoothly without the manager's immediate input. We tend to think of making things happen instead of allowing things to happen. So stop trying to control everything. And number three, stop taking on too much. I feel so overwhelmed. How am I get this done? You know, and I step back and go, you're trying to do too many things. By the way, one really good technique for this, trying to take on too many things, I know this was also one of this addressed in one of the submitted questions this week. One of the reasons we tend to get into the state of feeling overwhelmed is that we will think in terms of projects. You know, here are the projects I want to get done. And very, very typically, we, you know, lay out when we're going to do what project, by when, and all that sounds reasonable, and it doesn't happen. It's always too much. We never get it all done. There's a couple of actual of reasons for that. One is, interesting enough, perception. There's an interesting study done, is if you ask people, you know, hey, do you think you could get this done, like, in 3 months? You know, and everybody will say yes. You say, you know, and you think you can get this done in 2 weeks, and then it puts, you know, pretend in the project, of course, but most people go, yeah, I could probably do this. Do you think you could do it in a week? And then most people go, no, I don't think I get it done a week. So the threshold tends to be 10 days. There's like an amnesia that happened to us around 10 days. If it's more than 10 days, we think we can get it done without really looking at it. So the antidote to this is deciding what projects we're going to do and taking a little planning time to jot down the task for each of this project. Now, a task is anything you can get done in 30 to 60 minutes. So literally, I'm going to sit down 30, 60 minutes, it will be done. No question about it. Concrete clarity. So to step by step, write down what are the tasks for this project. And then we start to schedule tasks. Now the beauty of doing this is that instead of fantasizing we're going to get this vague project done, when we look at the task, we schedule much more accurately. You know, I have 3 hours in the morning. I can knock off three tasks, and I can, and this task has 21, you know, this project has 21 tasks to it. I'm not going to finish this week. I can know that immediately, and I can schedule it for, you know, the month of December and set aside those times, for example. But in short, if you're doing too many things, you need to do fewer things. Prioritize. This is a wonderful time to look at coherence. The four pillars of Kuan Yin healing are clarity, connection, coherence, and change. Coherence is one that a lot of us have trouble with. We're doing a lot of different things, but where are we trying to head overall in our life? Are we headed in all these different directions? Now, it's certainly okay to be doing different things, but what are we ultimately about? Where are we ultimately headed? If all those things start to head in the same direction, our life has coherence, and this will tremendously help with prioritization. We can see which are the things that truly serve where we're going and which are the things that are less important. So a lot of paradigm-shifting type material here. And also in this module, there's several resources. It would take you a long time to go through these. but way beyond time management. Like Stephen Covey talks about first things first, but this is really a time management thing. Although there's a reality to it, right? There's 168 hours in a week. That's what you have. And you want your life to be balanced. Tim Ferriss in the 4-Hour Workweek has a lot of really interesting, challenging ideas, taking the Pareto principle seriously, that 80% of our results come from 20% of activities. When I first sat down after my first year of business and looked at everything, client by client, everybody I had done anything for, you know, you would think you would recognize this, but you don't if you sit down and look at it. I realized that 90% of my income was coming from fewer than 10% of my clients. So a lot of the things I was doing, trying to bend over backwards, trying to appease the and entice and so forth, you know, the masses of clients, I realized that 90% of my time was just unproductive. And that's what led me to start focusing around building programs that would go more deeply in for the people who wanted to do the work. And it, you know, changed the direction of my business and made it sustainable. So looking at these things and making decisions about those. And this is not simply the things that you should be doing. You think you should be doing career things. What about your big dreams? What kind of relationship? Okay? What kind of person? If you're thinking in terms of career, what kind of clients, what kind of business, what kind of suppliers, where do you want to live? And starting to looking for where you truly want to be. And we really, really start to get clear about all this and connect all these dots, we can see pretty quickly where the changes need to be made. Now, at first, that's going to be overwhelming. There's like, oh, my God, there's all these things to do. Here's what you do. You ask yourself two important questions. What's my biggest opportunity in these areas right now? And that's obviously something you want to pursue, okay? What's the weakest link in the chain right now, okay? That's among the things you want to do. What's the biggest hurdle I'm facing? And that you want to look at, okay? And you focus on those two things. And as you knock those two things off, okay, now what's my biggest opportunity? Now what's my weakest link? And this will help you focus on just a handful of things, okay? Another typical problem, letting go of resentments. Resentments are useless, absolutely useless. And it's a game that is, you know, we all kind of frequently play. It doesn't matter what the other person did or deserves. It honestly just doesn't. It does nothing to the other person. It holds ourselves back. It makes us miserable. Really, stop. Just stop. You know, we can get so easily wrapped up among these things, but we're trying to be, you know, when we do this, it's, you know, look at the great and powerful me. It's how could people do this to me? You know, the reality of life is people don't think about us that much. You know, we're just not that important to folks. One of the things I like to do if I'm caught on this is I try to imagine, you know, whatever works for you, God, universe, Buddha, white buffalo woman, anything else meaningful, like sitting on my shoulder watching this situation. And I try to imagine them like siding with me in this, going, oh, yeah, man, the crap you have to put up with, Jim. And then I realize how silly that would be. And it helps pull me back into a bigger perspective. Okay? Don't let other people rent space in your head. Evict them. You know, use that energy for something more powerful. Pray for them. The prayer isn't for them. It's really for you to pull you out of this state. And this is really a step towards learning to let things go, learning to step away from our ego. We tend to react, and that's going to be a problem for a while until we get used to that. That driver that cut me off this morning didn't get up early and drive across town just to cut me off. May not even know the difference. You know, you want to let those things go. Or when they happen, you know, anger will happen. But it's a red flag. It happened. You recognize it. Let it go. You know, somebody cuts me off, I swear, and then, like, forget about it. You know, bless you, have a great day. You know, something's going on in your life, you know, just move on. If we find ourselves hanging on to anger, it's covering up something else. It's covering up something else. We're afraid of something. We regret something. There's something else going on there. And so there's a whole section here about that. Another section about honesty, forgiveness, ego, teams, healing, the role that all this plays. You know, there's a ton of stuff in this module. Goes on for 30 pages. And how to release emotional pain. There's a little healing exercise, you know. Remember that we're a vibration. In physical healing, you can heal yourself physically by focusing on that pain and situation, picturing yourself totally healthy, and just releasing it, just seeing it, that the pain or the release just radiating out, dissipating. And if you continue to focus on that, you'll see a difference. The same thing is true of emotional pain. We tend to cling to emotional pain. Instead, radiate it. Let it simply dissipate, fall off into the universe, okay? Simply gone. And see yourself instead grateful, happy, healthy. Look for things to be happy about. It will change your state. And it will also make you far more productive. And begin to let us release our attachment to ego. Our egos will keep us blind. Ego serves an important point, but egos will keep us blind. So, in my typical long rambling fashion, ta-da, that's what we covered in Module 3. Those are the highlights. Something well worth going back through slowly and carefully. So, that brings us to questions. I've already addressed a couple of Bruce's, so let me look again at what Bruce posted here. Okay, Bruce, talking about a dilemma, kept up with my spiritual practice for a couple days on my trip, had great insights. They just took a significant amount of time to flesh out. I found I processed them better and was able to remember them better if I wrote out the significant points of the thought process. This would sometimes take an hour or more at each end of the day. When I tried to make it brief, it was also superficial. Any days I have time to do this and could probably make time most of the rest of them. However, I stopped wanting to as I had new and fulfilling relationships and fun experiences to fill my day. And this kind of go on. But, okay. Bruce, what you're doing is putting together a couple of different issues. You go on to ask, what are my thoughts on foregoing the spiritual practice to actually enjoy more of the life experience? I know making it a habit makes it more likely I'll do it when I have more time or could just force myself to get by and go to sleep, but it seems to me the purpose of all of it is to enjoy the moment doing what I want to do most in the moment, and often the practice falls away short down the list. All right, Bruce, when you first told me what your plans were for your spiritual practice, I didn't say anything, but I'm going to tell you, honestly, my reaction was, that's unsustainable. And it was just unsustainable. It's just way too much time invested for a new practice. And so I'm actually not surprised to see this come up. And that's fine. You know, that's how we learn these things. So going back to, you know, designing a process at first and going, what can I do that is going to happen even when life is busy and all these things. So you might think in terms, Bruce, of, you know, you're like A practice, your B practice, and your C practice. So the A practice is whatever it is. This 15 minutes happens, I don't care if the world is on fire. Okay? The B practice may be, ideally, this is what I do every day. Okay, I try to make mostly do it, but that part is negotiable. The C practice is, the days I have time is what I would love my practice to be. And break it into those essentials, preferred, and when I have time aspects. The goal of the daily spiritual practice is to eventually, sooner better than later, but it needs to grow. Spiritual practice eventually is a 24/7 thing. you know, truly walking with the divine 24/7, that there isn't a gratitude period, but rather gratitude is 24/7, that connection is 24/7, that coherence is 24/7. But that doesn't just happen. You know, it happens, we need to grow that. So the purpose of the daily spiritual practice is that daily touchstone, not that the rest of our life isn't important. The rest of our life is entirely important. New relationships, fun experiences, these are spiritual experiences. This is joy. This is connection with the divine. Okay. Going to bed late, this is not a healthy practice, okay, because it's just going to take away from the coming days. Taking care of ourselves in terms of little things, you know, eating breakfast, eating lunch, eating dinner, going to bed at a reasonable time, getting up at a reasonable time. This daily structure is so important. You look at animals, they do this automatically, right? Doesn't matter what time I go to bed. My dog goes to bed the same time every day. You know, mammals know
how
to do
how
this.
How do I balance that with, because that came up in Hawaii, because I was living life to the full extent that I could, and so there was just more than I could pack into the 2 weeks if I was going to bed.
Right.
At a reasonable time.
Well, yeah, you're planning. You tried to do too much. It's not a great mystery here. You know, if I'm going on vacation, I go on vacation. Yesterday, my friend Louise and I went to the Buddhist monastery, and on the way back there was a snowstorm. And, you know, how do I go through all that and not be tired and frazzled and frustrated? It's because the entire plan for yesterday was go to the Buddhist monastery. That was it. That's the entire plan. That's it. And get home safely. And so the rest of it was just stuff that happened. So in terms of, you know, if I'm going on vacation, I've got a lot of things to do. That's the time to just focus on your A-list. The 15, 20 minutes you do every day, the 5 minutes you do, you know, 15 minutes in the morning, 5 minutes of gratitude in the afternoon, in the evening, this will do it. That's sufficient. This is, you know, it's the daily repetition, it's the daily focus, it's the prioritizing in the life, not putting all our time into it, that's important. Now, you may find at some point, so my spiritual practice at this point is a couple hours in the morning, and that's in my schedule. But it wasn't that way at first, and it wouldn't have worked well if I had tried to do it that way at first. You know, a lot of other changes had to happen. Go slow. If you've got great ideas you want to pursue later, you know, just jot down the topic areas and then later go back and flesh them out and explore them when you want to. But keep things simple. You don't want this to be complicating your life. You want it to be simplifying your life. So you asked a couple things, and Deborah talks about balance, learning and letting go, new perspective. And you don't have to condemn yourself for not dedicating an hour every day. Absolutely agree. She compares it to ice cream. You discover ice cream and, like, you want more and more ice cream. You know, more ice cream isn't better. The right amount of ice cream is good. The same thing is true of everything. Okay? I don't know. What are some other, you know? With somebody appropriate, sex is wonderful. But sex continually, it'll get pretty old. And you'll be pretty sore. Good food is wonderful. You don't want to eat 10 plates of it at one sitting. The same thing is true of anything. All things in moderation. Didn't mean to this be like a primer in Buddhism, but, you know, one of Buddha's primary teachings after going through all this asceticism that he did is the middle way, the importance of the middle way, compares this to, he had this insight when he was awakening, really, when he heard a passing musician instructing his student. He was on the shore, they were on a boat on the river, and the musician was telling his student, if you tighten the string too tightly, it will snap. If the string is too lax, it won't play. It needs to be between those. And this was the beginnings of Buddha's the middle way. So my advice, suggestion to you, Bruce, is the middle way. Okay? So, and we find the middle way by going to extremes at first. That's fine. If I were going on vacation in Hawaii, I would spend most of my time enjoying my vacation in Hawaii and thinking about little else. But what helped me do that, when I was talking about laying out tasks for projects, we tend to worry about, am I getting these other things done? The wonderful benefit of doing that is, if I know ahead of time, these are the things I want to accomplish, personally as well as business and around home, and I can lay out, and I broke it into tasks, so that I know that I'm doing all the parts, and I have scheduled time for those things, as well as all the time for friends and, so forth. I can work on something, or I can go to the monastery for a day, even though I've got a ton of things to do in multiple different places, and just forget about all of it, because I know it will all get done, because it's already been appropriately laid out. So that's my suggestion. Just, don't try to do everything. And as Deborah says, you'll find the balance that works for you. I've been saying, like in a couple hours versus 15 minutes, you might find that, 30 minutes for you is perfect. That less than that really bugs you. More than that is optional. Doesn't matter. Wherever that falls out for you. Okay, you've got another question here. Let me see if Heather's... Heather, how you doing? Any questions?
I'm doing great. Just listening. Everything is a repeat here for me, so I'm following mm-hmm. along.
Excellent. I love repeats because...
Yeah.
I love repeats myself because I keep hearing things and I go, oh, yeah. I remember that. I need to get back into that.
Yeah. So there's that piece, and then there's also, good job, Heather. You've been following through on that component. So
yeah,
that's good,
that's
too.
Important. Yeah.
Yeah.
Congratulations, then. Well done.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, Bruce, I think I may have largely addressed your other question as well. You were talking about picking up 365 Tao and reading the daily reading on eroticism and spirituality. You quoted it saying, eroticism and spirituality mean intense involvement in the diversity and color of the world. But there is a higher order, a state where one is holiness itself. Then nothing of the world of color matters to you anymore. And then you go on to dig in your heels. One of the things you most resist in Eastern philosophy, nothing matters. How is moving to a state of ambivalence progress? I don't want to live in apathy. I enjoy caring, desiring. Yes, sometimes these things can lead to emotional pain, but they can also lead to exquisite joy. To me, progression would be to overcome or release any pain, but still fully feel the joy. Not caring just seems dead to me. Okay, so we've addressed part of this, but let me address the other parts that come into this. So the first thing I would point out, and then I'll look at your other questions, is that you have misunderstood an important part of this passage. It does not say not to feel eroticism and intense involvement in the world. What it does say is that there will come a time when you evolve past those things. They won't be bad. You simply will see things in a different way. you will have a different perspective. Other things will become more important. I alluded to this earlier in the hero's journey. Okay, there's nothing wrong with any of our desires, but there will come a time when the only thing we want is awareness. Okay? And it doesn't mean that everything that comes before that is bad. You know, it's a process we get to step by step. And that expansion and involvement in the world is important. So this passage is pointing out simply that there is that higher order, a state where one is holiness itself. So, and there's a spirituality that means intense involvement, and there's a state where one is holiness itself. When we are at the state where we are holiness itself, rather than people practicing spirituality, okay, then the color of the world falls away because we are no longer of the world. We are no longer in the world at that point.
I still have a hard time with that. I mean, I've got a whole list of questions.
Well,
a lot
wait,
of them kind of go around.
Yeah. That. Well, actually, yeah, you're that's the circle around that is a good point. So this is not, the passage here is not telling you what to do. It is pointing out that there are different states. Okay? For example.
It still seems to be pointing at the highest.
Hang on a second.
Not caring. Okay.
Hang on a second. For example, you're dead. You no longer have a body. You're nothing but spirit. How important is ice cream to you?
Well, probably not at all at that point. But
probably not at all. That's exactly what we're talking about here.
If I had the choice to go back and experience that, would not maybe I'd want to.
Okay, which is why, and for a while, you'll do any of that. You'll keep going back into lives where you can have more ice cream. Okay, but what you're misunderstanding is it doesn't mean that at that dead ice creamless state, okay, that you are not full of joy and happiness. It's not a question of this is good and this is bad, or you shouldn't want this and you should want this. It is pointing out there are different states.
And I get
that's
that,
it.
But it still
so,
seems like...
No, you don't. You really don't. There is
okay.
A state where one is holiness itself. You aren't at that point practicing spirituality. You are literally holiness, the concept. You no longer have an ego. You are no longer separate.
Okay, so I don't get it, but I don't know that I want
right.
to move towards something that where I live a life of ambivalence. I live an existence of ambivalence.
Okay, so let's move towards we're going to go in circles on this one. So this isn't something to agree with or disagree with. It's just simply defining it. Okay, that's it. The passage isn't advice. It's just simply telling you. There are different states. So this is not a like or dislike it. It's just saying, hey, Bruce, there are these different states. Here's what they are. Okay? So there's nothing to accept or resist other than going, got it. Okay? Now, moving into your questions, which are separate from that passage. One of the things you most resist in Eastern philosophy, nothing matters. Total misconception. For the reasons that we talked about earlier, okay? It's not that desire is bad. It's that attachment to outcome is going to make you unhappy. It's not even that attachment to outcome is bad. It's just that attachment to outcome is going to keep you unhappy.
Okay.
The statement that Eastern philosophy says nothing matters is flatly false. That's a misunderstanding. Okay? How is moving to a state of total ambivalence progress? Again, that's a misunderstanding. This is not a state of total ambivalence. Quite the opposite. That what one feels in that highest state is a perfect compassion. Okay. That's not ambivalence at all. Just amazing compassion for all that is and connection to all that is. It feels wonderful. It's not at all, you said, I don't want to live in apathy. It's not apathy at all. It's the exact opposite of apathy. It's total compassion. And not a compassion that you have to choose to embrace. At just compassion is the only logical way to go. I enjoy caring and desiring. So you're going to love this. Sometimes those things can lead to emotional pain, but they can also lead to exquisite joy. Granted. To me, progression would be to overcome and release any pain, but still fully feel the joy. Okay. Well, then you say not caring just seems dead to me. Again, that's simply
a misunderstanding. Wait, now back up. You didn't address the first one. Back up.
I know. Hang on. I said, I'm going to address that because that's on the same subject, and then we'll go back.
Okay.
So not caring just seems dead to me. We dealt with that. To me, progression would be to overcome or release any pain but still fully feel the joy. There's a Zen saying that points out, you know, before enlightenment, chopping wood, carrying water. After enlightenment, chopping wood, carrying water. There's a similar Hindu saying that says, before samadhi, I felt like I had lost both my parents. After samadhi, I felt like I had lost both my parents. It doesn't mean no more pain. Again, we have this good-bad attachment to pain. Pain is feedback. Pain is useful. The progression is not to overcome and release any pain per se, but rather to, as we run into our trials, okay, to learn and acquire the skills and understanding that we need that are the reason that trial is there for us, okay, for our own good, and to overcome that and acquire the blessings and the boon of that and to move on to the next trial.
We're about a month
ahead of ourselves. So there's a progression to this idea. There's a reason I don't just jump into it. You know, this is why we go step by step from physical, emotional, and right now we're talking about things that is literally a month ahead of us at this point, in terms of where we are in the program.
Okay. Well, in this week's homework, we talked about attaching judgment of good and bad to outcomes. And if I'm not attaching judgment, how does desire play into that? If I'm not moving towards something because it's enjoyable to me, so that's good, or moving away from something that I'm not getting joy out of, which is bad. That doesn't make sense to me.
You're confusing desire and judgment. So let me look at this in a different way. Stephen Covey talks about the dichotomy of judgment and understanding. And he points out that when we are judging something, we are not even trying to understand it. So let's say that somebody does something and I say, well, you were just wrong. You notice that I'm not even trying to understand. Now, that doesn't mean I have to, you know, approve that. I could say, you know, I think you really kind of messed up there, but I can understand why you did that. Now, though, you notice I'm not judging them.
Okay, well, let's talk about it.
So understanding and judgment are in different odds, are at different places. We can't, you know, it's one or the other. Okay? Now, having a desire to do something, okay, here's the thing. If I have a desire to do something, but I'm going to judge each step if it's good or bad, I'm not going to learn much because I am simply doing everything from my current understanding. if I pursue my desires and I keep expanding and growing and learning and seeing new perspectives and new things, I'm going to acquire a very different understanding. But you also notice I've stopped judging it. Does that make sense?
No, it doesn't.
All right.
I need to put that into something concrete that I, you know, I'm an example. So we've dealt with, in my first week here, the relationship that I'm not currently engaged in, but what I moved towards connection with her because that was enjoyable. That was what I desired. And I, those things that brought disharmony to that connection were things that I moved away from. So and it was because of seeing one as something enjoyable and one as not enjoyable that I moved, that the desire was there to move towards one or and not the other.
Yeah. And?
So to me, I don't understand the difference between.
Well, I don't understand the difference between what you're describing and what we've already talked about. The only difference being, you know, if, I mean, I don't get it. What am I not understanding?
I'm not seeing the attachment to the judgments. I'm saying, so I'm judging one as good and the other as not good. That's what creates the desire. You've told me that desire is okay, but attaching judgment to it is not. So, but I don't, I don't see the difference.
Okay. So, let's say you get hungry for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And you desire to have dinner.
Right.
Is feeling hungry good or bad?
Feeling hungry could be seen as bad, but it's mostly just information.
There you go. It's neither good nor bad. But you have the desire to eat.
Okay, let me ask another question that may give you more enlightenment where I'm coming, because I still don't get it. If we don't care if something goes away, i.e. we don't have attachment to it, how do we fully embrace it? I mean, to me it seems like, again, going back to relationships, say the relationship with my kids. If I have my son here today and I love him, now I can't even talk about it without getting emotional. I love him to death. He's so awesome. And I would really care if I didn't have that anymore. So there is some attachment there.
Mm-hmm.
How do I let go of that attachment and still care that much?
All right, let's take like a past relationship, all right? Let's take one of mine so we can get out of your emotional state. You know, wanted it, it happened, it's over. Okay? In the past. I have some options. I could go, but I really wanted it, and it's terrible that it ended, and I'm dwelling on that. Totally living in the past. That's going to be a source of pain. Or I can say, I had this wonderful experience. It came. It was part of my life. It went on. We both moved on. Okay? And, you know, there were just these wonderful things that happened. And even here I have a choice. I can say, man, if I could only have something wonderful like that again, why don't I have it? Now I'm right back to judging. Or I can say, you know, I'm so grateful that this is part of my whole soul experience.
But isn't the desire there to return to that? If my son suddenly, you know, died in an accident and I don't have him around anymore. I'm going to miss that.
Mm-hmm.
That connection with him and being able to spend
yeah.
time with him.
Right.
And I'm going to desire to, I mean, it may be, it is what it is. I mean, obviously, if he's not in this physical plane anymore, that I just have to accept it is what it is, but it doesn't mean that I don't still desire that I could have that back.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're determined to go around in semantics, okay? If you focus the rest of your life with the fact that he's gone, you're going to be one miserable guy. If you focus your life on the fact that, you know, this wonderful being was part of my life and I have these wonderful memories, you're going to move on to new experiences and new desires. If you want to bring in this whole, you know, the spiritual thing, the fact is, like, it's not over yet. It's just over for now. I mean, there's going to be 100,000 what-ifs, Bruce.
I get that, but
right.
I'm not understanding the difference between attachment and desire. I'm not, maybe I just won't. I know I don't want to believe.
Well, as long as you stay attached to something, as long as you stay attached to something that has already happened, you're going to be miserable. As long as you are projecting what needs to happen in the future, you're going to be anxious. As long as you are where you are, right, in your current reality, which includes desires, it includes memories, and appreciative of where you are and where you're headed, okay, that's going to feel better. And whatever labels you put on any of it, that's going to be the reality. I mean, if you really want to get to an ultimate spiritual truth, the entire world that you're living in, you know, it doesn't exist.
Well, now you're talking Course in Miracles stuff, which that's a hot button.
Well, like, not just Course in Miracles, you know, Hermann Hesse, the glass bead game, you know? I mean, the essence of Buddhism, it's like it's essence of anything, you know? The physical world comes, it goes. It lives in our minds. Everything is energy vibration. And if you really want to get down to this, we're living in total illusions to which we have attachment.
Well, again, that's running around in circles, but if it's all illusion, that seems pretty pointless.
Well, it comes down to, you know, it's, again, you know, you're trying to absorb a month's worth of stuff in a quick answer. That isn't good. That just isn't going to happen. There's a reason there's a month worth of material between here and there. But, you know, nonetheless, you know, you're constructing what-if things. The principle is this. You know, I'd really like to build this. This would be great. And you continually work forward. That's desire. Okay? I'm going to do this, and it has to happen in this way, and it doesn't happen in this way. It's all going to hell. That's going to be miserable. I need to have a relationship with this person in this way. And if I don't, my life will fall apart. That's going to be miserable. Versus being open to all kinds of other wonderful things. The reason we always have more desires is as we get closer to our goal, we've expanded and we're not the same people. You know, there's a woman I thought I totally needed in my life at one point. Now, it's like we're such incredibly different people. We would have been miserable. I didn't know that at the time. I needed to grow past that and be willing to be open to other experiences. My grandfather, you know, was an extremely important person in my life. He died. It happens. But my grandfather is a source of wisdom and love and gratitude for me. if I'm going to stay attached to the idea that he's dead or this other relationship didn't work out or that things aren't progressing the way I figured they should go, I'm going to be, one, miserable, and two, stuck because I'm closed off to all the other opportunities. And I'm not going to learn anything. I'm not going to grow in awareness. I'm not going to grow in understanding because I'm deliberately choosing to stay stuck in that point. That's the difference. It's not at all apathy, as you put it in your question. It's not at all dead. It's not at all that nothing matters. It's not ambivalence. It's gratitude. It's appreciation. It's embracing it all. And that is a source of exquisite joy. I learned so much from my grandfather. It still sparks new things. I learned so much from this ex, including what I wanted and didn't want. Including open new doors, doors that continue to open. It's a continual growth thing, even though those are things in the past. This is desire. Attachment to the outcomes I wanted, I had to let go of those. But in the process, the essence of what I was desiring continues to grow along with awareness and understanding. Because if we don't, if we just cling to those things, there is nowhere to go.
I guess it's one of those things. I mean, I've been kind of struggling with this, these questions like this for years and years and years, and I guess it's just one of those
things.
Yeah, I know. When it finally clicks, it'll click, but it's just not clicking now.
Right. Yeah. I saw, you know, when we first started this program together, Bruce, and this is fine. I saw it immediately. I was like, okay, I'm going to have to go into conversations he's been having with himself and others for years. and I appreciate your being a good sport and being open to this and talking them out. A lot of this is baggage that, you know, this is going to happen with everybody that we brought in with us.
I guess that kind of leads me into the next question. Heather, if I'm taking time you want, please jump in. But you talked about
this is fine.
Finding what bugs me is the key to our tragic flaws and identifying our tragic flaws and what's holding us back. I mean, and I really just want to understand this, and I just don't.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that, you know, that's definitely something that bugs me.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that bugs me, and I don't know what the reveal on this is that if I feel people are being hypocritical or not accountable, that really bugs me. And I was like, okay, so you're saying you think life is a mirror. I really, really, really watch myself to try and not be hypocritical and to be accountable for myself. And so if that's what I'm projecting out in the world, that I'm a hypocrite and I'm not being accountable, that's totally against what I'm trying to live my life as. So I don't get that either.
Okay, so the thing to focus in then is, you know, what are the things that I'm not getting? Okay? So it doesn't have to be such a literal swap. It's just being aware that there's something there. Okay? There's let me give an example. When I first stopped drinking and was going to AA meetings. The first thing that happens when you're new to all that is you're pretty raw, and, you know, there are a whole lot of people that irritate you. And you know, as I progressed in recovery, you know, a lot of that went away, but there'd be still selected people. And at first I'm like, oh, you know, I hate when this person talks. It so irritates me. And then I finally stepped away and said, it's not, Bruce, that, you know, that this person is directly saying something, though it might, that sometimes that's the case. But rather, I finally started asking myself, why am I in such fragile state of peace that one person talking for 5 minutes is irritating? And I thought, well, that's an interesting question. And so whenever that happened, I started to look instead at, why aren't I more peaceful than this? Why is my peace so readily shattered? And it's hard to see our own things. This is where, you know, getting input from others is really, really useful. You know, you haven't mentioned that, so I'm wondering if that part has happened.
If what has happened,
but,
go ahead.
Getting input from other people, right? Who
input,
can more readily?
I seek input from lots of people. So I don't know if that's, I'm not sure what you're asking.
Yeah, so, you know, if I asked six of my closest friends, what do you think is my biggest challenge? They're going to jump in with the same things. Whether I want to admit it or not, they all see the same things. Okay? And then over time, you know, this is not a 5-minute exercise. Over time, some of these things become clear to me. One thing, for example, you know, for most of my life, you know, one of the most important things to me has been security. But over time, I also recognize that, you know, and I'm making a choice between freedom and security. When you choose security, you give up both. And that choice for security has really, really, really held me back in many, many ways. Now, that's okay. You know, that's what the learning process is. But now knowing that, I can slowly learn to recognize that this is part of my tragic flaw, as I'm actually keep pushing away that which I seek. And by learning to live in freedom, that is true security, because I can continually recreate things instead of being worried, what if I lose them?
I guess
that's just me. That's just one example, okay?
Right. If I had to pick something that I keep hearing, you know, hearing over and over, it's that I'm attaching good and bad to things. And because I get that from you, I have people that I have kind of a core group of people that I have these discussions with, and they say the same mm-hmm. thing. And it's like, well, if my experience is this is unpleasant versus this is pleasant. I don't know how mm-hmm. to not attach a good and bad to that. It's one I like, one I don't.
Mm-hmm. So this is where you'd be patient with yourself. Okay? And this is where you just sit with it and you give it time and you go, well, you know, is there something to this?
Been sitting with it for a number of years and still haven't figured it out.
Well, yeah, it's not gonna come in 5 minutes. Okay.
Within this decade would be nice.
Hmm. Well, I mean, you know, if you were to ask me, one of the things that I observe is that, you know, we have all these different ways to understand and interact with the world, and we not uncommonly try to make our conscious minds do most of the work, which is one of the problems that we have, you know. You know, you unquestionably do that.
Yeah.
And
I don't know how to do anything else.
Well, see, and that's the point. This is why it's a tragic flaw. So that instead of learning to do something else, you go right back to, well, yeah, well, this is my only tool, though. So, you know, how do I use this tool? And the question is, like, you can't. You have to move past it. It reminds me of when I once got a Makita screwdriver, right? Power screwdriver. I'd never had one before, and this is a really good one. And I'm like, you know, so I get up, get the screw, and so it's like, zoop. I go, oh my God, this is so cool. And like, I'm literally walking around my house looking for things that I can screw. You know, I love this tool. Give me more ways to use this tool, right? There's nothing wrong with the tool. It's just like at a certain point I had to admit, okay, it's time to move on to some other tools. This thing is not going to cook your dinner. right? The conscious mind is an awesome tool. It's not everything.
Okay,
and
so
it can't do everything.
You don't like it when I say I get that, but so I don't know how else to say it. I comprehend that. I just don't know how to use the other tools. I'm willing to learn how to use other tools, but I got to be shown.
Okay. Here's the first thing you do. Before I learn how to pick up another tool and use it, what's the first thing I have to do when I'm standing there with that Makita in my hand?
You have to be aware that there is other tools.
Okay, what's the next thing I have to do?
I have to put down the Makita.
There you go.
How do I put down the Makita? Obviously, that's something just setting it down. I don't know how to set down. How do I set down my conscious mind?
Yeah, what you do is you pick it up immediately. And so here's what you do. You have a daily spiritual practice. You start getting into meditation. Just relax and breathe. Shift your attention to your heart. Just, you don't have to do anything special techniques. Just center your attention in your heart for a while, which will automatically take attention away from your head. So rather than not doing something, you do something instead. Instead of not focusing on your head, focus somewhere else. Whether that's focusing on a candle, focusing on your breathing, focusing on your heart, focusing on your reading, focusing on God, focusing on Hawaii. It's very hard to not do something. You have to do something different. One of my favorite cures for the blues, which doesn't happen to me very often, but once in a while, is to get up and go running. You know, you have to do something different. And you have to be patient. And bit by bit, it will come. It will come. But first, I have to put down the Makita. And I have to pick up something else. You could manufacture something if you want. It doesn't matter what it is. You know, grab yourself a crystal, for example. Doesn't have to be a crystal. It could be a pencil. And just you know, keep it in your pocket and just go, I'm focusing my attention on this crystal. You know, why? I don't know, because. Just to focus attention somewhere else. And the more you do that, the more you start allowing things. The proper... You know, again, a lot of the problems with the questions we're having, Bruce, is that we're like a month ahead of what's a very comprehensive program for a reason. So we're wrestling with things that you're not ready to wrestle with yet. I didn't mean that to sound patronizing. I mean that there are steps to this process that we haven't taken yet, and we're talking about later steps.
I'm okay with
the
that.
Proper,
it seems that that's what.
No, yeah. I know you get
this
that.
This week's homework.
No. I get that. That's why we're talking about it, right? It would be easy. It would have been easy an hour ago to shut the door and say, we'll talk about that later. So I get that. And that's just, you know, just because I've laid it out in a linear process doesn't mean that's the way we experience it. Not at all. So I totally get that. So, you know, thank you for that reminder. By contrast, the proper use of the mind is to set intentions, Okay, to sort through, prioritize, you know, recognize those desires, set intentions. You're going to hate this, I know, and I'm going to regret even telling you, teasing. And then once you've done that, the mind's job is over. Everything else is just in the way. Do you ever like trying to do a job and somebody's trying to help you and what you're actually thinking is, you know, maybe you're not too polite to say something, but what you're thinking is, this job would go way faster if you would get the hell out of my way and just let me do it. And this is what our minds do. After we've set that intention, the mind's job is done. Now it's time to play it out. Now it's time to allow. And instead, you know, we like to just continually rehash this. It's the wrong tool for the job. So that's the other extreme. That's a goal. That isn't going to happen quickly. But that's the extreme. You know, and things happen quickly then. And you also notice that that's totally embracing desire, and it's totally letting go of attachment. Because something way, way better may come, and often does, come into focus. But anyway, your original is resistance here to the whole idea that Eastern philosophy means nothing matters. It's just flatly not true. Embrace your desires, have fun, enjoy Hawaii, enjoy life. You know, analyze it less, enjoy it more.
So that the crystal or the pencil or something, when I find myself analyzing it, get the crystal or the pencil or the shoelace or whatever happens, I keep in my pocket. It doesn't matter what it is. I just say I'm...
Yep. Mm-hmm. Instead of, it's like, just go, oops, I'm in my head, and instead focus on the crystal. I'm all about the crystal or I'm all about the shoelace or whatever you choose. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And, you know, you'll recognize it and you'll start to change your patterns. It will take time. But the first thing that will happen is you'll catch yourself. You know, and that's the awareness with a small a.
Where is the point and the benefit of analysis? Because I think that's how I make a lot of decisions, and some of them I head in the right direction because of the analysis.
Again,
I get that I overanalyze things.
There you go. You answered your own question.
So how do I know when I'm crossing that boundary? From
so you got the Makita. You got the Makita in your hand. You got the screw.
Yeah.
You screwed in the screw. The project is done. Put down the screwdriver. Don't take it out. Don't put it into reverse. Take the screw out again just to make sure it actually went in right and screw it in again. Try the screw in a different place. There you go.
In reality.
There you go. So you totally get it. Do you see what I'm talking about?
I don't think those threads fit quite right. Maybe I better put a toothpick in there to tighten that up a little bit.
There you go. So, you know, and none of this, Bruce, is judgment. It's not good or bad. It's just... You know, trying to help recognize here's what's going on. I love your questions. That, you know, it delves us into such great places and great conversations. You know, like Heather said, she's just having a ball sitting back listening to this. You know, and so will other people who listen, which is great. This, you know, you won't be the only one. You know, these discussions are going to help a whole ton of people. Who are like, I so totally understand where Bruce is coming from. Go, Bruce. You know, and I've been there. I have so totally been there. Some of my friends flat out said, you know, years ago, I was worried about they about you. I always thought you were going to try to think your way through this. And they were dead on. You know, it's like anything else. Cooking your dinner is great. Cooking it for 6 hours when it should take 10 minutes, not great.
I guess that's probably one of my other flaws is it goes hand in hand with it. I want things to be perfect and sometimes mm-hmm. need to let go and just be happy with
yeah.
good enough.
I think we're finding some of those tragic flaws. What do you think?
Well, yeah, probably.
And I share some of them. You know, it's... I actually learned this as a musician when I was doing albums in the 80s. I finally came to realize, you know, at a certain point, I have to declare this album done or it will forever sit in my studio. You know, and I just had to recognize there's a point to say, okay, you know, I could make it more perfect forever. It's done. Go make yourself another album. Release this one. Same thing is true of books. Same thing is true of courses. Same thing is true of everything.
Okay, but again, that kind of goes to a balance because I've tried writing a book before. I thought, you know, I'd like to write a book, and it's like, well, I guess that's a poor example because I never really could. I got stuck really early on in the process. But for somebody that did have that talent, I think there's a point of valuable refinement, and then it gets to the point of minutia. So how do you know where you've crossed that line?
When I'm teaching professional writers, because I do a lot of work with professional writers, and I teach them to write a crappy book first. Because writing a crappy book is easy. And then you start fixing the crappy book. You know? And here are the things that you do, and once you've gone through these, and you proofread and edit, you get it to your editor. Because this is what editors do. It's you know, you've been through Ryan's program. I'm sure you've heard Ryan say this. I've heard Bill Barron say this before Ryan, and you know, take imperfect action. If you don't take imperfect action, nothing gets done. Because all you have to do is be a god. You know, and that's kind of a high bar.
Well, that sounds like that's the key, is if as long as I'm taking action, I can continue to analyze, but if it's paralyzing me from moving forward, then that's where the problem comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard T. Harv Eker? I think it's Ready, Fire, Aim. So,
uh-huh. Yeah. I'm totally behind that.
Okay.
You find anybody, you know, Acker is a good one for this. You'll find several other people say the same thing. People who are successful in the business world is what you're talking about now. They take fast action. They fix things later. It may also surprise you, Bruce, or maybe not, I don't know, but you'll also find if you look at their biographies and their lectures and the blogs that people are successful in the business world pretty commonly have an hour or two of prayer and meditation in the middle of their day where they, it's not simply for peace or centering, they are literally asking, so what's the plan? They're looking for input greater than their own minds. And they act on that input. It takes some practice. Again, we'll get there. I mean, one example I've had, once a week I sit down with a special counsel in meditation. You know, the first week I did this, you know, what came up for me, it was very, very clear. It said, get your passport. I'm like, I have no plans to do it. Like, why would I need a passport? But it was clear a day. It was like, you know, what do you need to do? You need to get your passport. Okay. You know, something's coming up that involves my passport, things like this. It takes time.
Well, and as many of the questions I ask, I kind of get that if I'm, you know what, you'll know the answer to that, but sometimes I resist that.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing that you're going to have to get used to, this bothered me anyway, is that you will tend to get the answer at the last minute.
I fully admit that's frustrating me because I'm a planner. I like to know where we're going well ahead of time.
Right.
So that is frustrating for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I can only tell you that I, one, understand your pain, and two, you'll need to make that adjustment. Just like, there's a plan. Just be patient.
That's probably one of the reasons I do overanalyze stuff. It's like, well, this still isn't clear to me. I need to figure it out.
That's the thing. That's the ego jumping right into the control thing. Somebody's got to run this damn universe, and if nobody else is going to do it, I'd better. I know
what else is there to do?
Yeah, there you go.
Well, that's how I step in.
Sounds like we're not the only ones, Bruce.
Yeah.
I don't really care about being a leader, but I will jump in if there's a vacuum. I did.
Yeah, that's not the same thing, is it? Right? That's not the same thing.
Things have to get done. Somebody's got to go do them. What are we sitting around doing nothing for? Meditating? What?
Right.
Breathing? Stuff has to get done.
Right. But like you said, Bruce, if there's a vacuum, right? And the problem there is, as I can see it, this is in place. Well, as I can see it, it's pretty limited.
I'm not following you.
I'm not privy to what's going on in the entire universe. I'm not even privy to what's going on in my town. Right?
Yeah.
For example, you know, the absolute, the next perfect, next wonderful love of my life that comes along, right? I can choose from the people I know, or I can say that, okay, somebody I don't know yet, who is amazing in ways I can't even comprehend yet, is coming along, which is going to be better. One way I have to rely on things I just don't know. Growing my business means putting it out there. It means establishing a relationship with people I don't yet know. The same thing is true of everything. I'd planned down every instance of 2014 except for one problem. I don't know what's going to happen, so I have to do a plan that recognizes that I'm not going to know what happens. And so, you know, you do what everybody does. You've heard these cliches before. It's like, you know, airplanes are off course almost all the time. They just continually readjust because they have a guiding principle. They know where they want to go. That's desire. That's clarity. Take imperfect action. You know, if you're in the major leagues and you're hitting 300, that's an awesome average. But it also means that 7 out of 10 times you can't even hit the frickin' ball.
Don't allow it.
You know, not even a lousy, you know, grounder for an easy out. So, anyway.
Hey, Tim, I have a question for you.
Sure.
This is a little bit unrelated, but I think it's a forum that I might find an answer. Do you know the metaphor for dream interpretation of knocking?
The metaphor for dream interpretation of knocking.
So this happened in 2009. I can remember exactly. I think I know the answer, but I'm just sort of throwing it out there to somebody other than myself. Like knocking on my door or knocking on the wall, like pulled me out of a completely dead. like the wall's going to come down. And, you know, maybe that's the answer right there. The walls are coming down, but letting something in, I don't know. I just thought I would toss it out there. Any comments?
Well, two comments. One, I'm in no way qualified to interpret your dreams. but second, well, I'm just being
yeah,
honest.
Okay. Yeah.
But also, I totally agree with what you said. If you're just asking my personal opinion, yeah, I think you're totally on top of that.
Okay. Just a sidebar. I just thought I would toss it out there.
And by the way, you know what I would say is you can ask. You know, you can get up in the morning and meditate and go, "What was that knocking in my dream about?"
Mhm. Yeah, that's what I've been doing. But again, the other people exist beyond myself, so I thought
sure,
I would speak up.
Right.
That's
well,
all.
Asking for help means asking for what's beyond yourself.
Yep.
Right.
I'm trying to do that more.
Yeah. You know, if
to another human, not just spirit all the time, because then we can just be isolated.
Oh, right. Okay. I gotcha.
All the time. Yeah, I'm pretty clear about tuning in and having communication with guidance, but that can be a lonesome human existence.
You remember WKRP in Cincinnati, that television show?
Mm-hmm.
There's an episode, I can't remember exactly where, what's that crazy DJ's name? Is that Johnny?
Mm-hmm.
Or
so.
It was, the hippie DJ. And he's like,
Yeah.
He goes to see, you know, very conservative Mr. Carlson, the manager, the owner. And he's been having dreams, and he hears a voice that says, "Love others," and he's kind of flipping out. And it's the conversation they have is fun. They go, and there's Mr. Carlson, even being very conservative, you know, is a Christian, and he points out, you know, if you're having dreams and there's a voice, if you're hearing voices, they say love others, you know, that's not a problem with that, you know. Now, if you hear voices that say get naked and run around the airport, I'd be concerned. And Johnny, you know, since we're talking about ego versus spirit, and Johnny says, no, that's my voice that tells me that.
Right. Okay, cool.
Yeah, it sounds good, Heather. Sorry, I didn't have anything more insightful.
No, that's okay. I'm going to sign off because I'm having dinner with my son here, so I'm going to say goodbye.
Yeah, I think we're winding down here anyway.
Okay, take care.
Yeah, take care, Heather.
Bye, Bruce.
So, Bruce, I think we're probably at a resting place for today.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
Did you know what you were biting off when you let me come in?
Well, part of the gig. So no worries. So this is you'll have some time to catch up and to spend some time and to look at things a little differently, and I think that you'll find that things start to shift and change for you.
I hope so. I don't try to be hard,
I get the sincerity. That's why you're here. I totally get it. But it will change. This is not my first rodeo. Just be patient.
Alrighty.
All right?
Okay.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, Tim.
Take care, everybody.
All right. See you.